שם בנגב המדבריות של צי 13 דברים הולכים בחושך בחמסים בשיירה בלי מטרה ברורה כמעט בלי נשק ובלי מים כלום לא קורה וכעבור זמן מה קולו של יוד שובר את הדממה מם מתנהג כאילו לא שמע ורק מעט כמעט לבינתיים 30 ימים ו30 לילות מטרטרים אותנו סתם
Hello, I'm Adrian Iosifescu, your host of the History of the Romanian Jews podcast, and this is episode 26, where we'll be discussing the accomplishments of the Romanian Jew Aaron Aronson. By the way, you just listened to the song Canaan, or 12 Spies, a song written and composed by the Israeli singer-songwriter Shlomi Shaban. A link to the full video is provided in the notes. As you may recall from one of our previous episodes, in the late 1900s, the idea of agricultural colonization of Palestine spread quickly among the Romanian Jews, and in 1875, a society called Jashub Eretz Israel, the colonization of Eretz Israel, was founded in the town of Moinești in Romania. Similar societies were created in other Romanian cities, and a turning point was reached with the Focșani Conference of 2 days, December 30, 1881 and January 1, 1882. 56 delegates representing 32 localities took part in the conference held in the town's Jewish school. At the Focșani Conference, it was decided to encourage and coordinate all efforts towards organized emigration and successful colonization in Palestine. The conference had a great impact on the European Jews, and many historians consider the Focșani Conference to be the true first Zionist Congress, years before Theodor Herzl's first Zionist Congress in Basel in 1897. One immediate result of the Focșani Conference was the departure of the ship Tethys from Galați in August 1882, bearing 228 Jews from the towns of Bacău and Moinești, the first Aliyah, who would be creating the first farming colonies in Palestine, Zichron Yaakov and Rosh Pina. Among these 228 Jews was Aaron Aronson, a six-year-old boy born in Bacău in 1876, and his parents, who were among the founders of the Zichron Yaakov near Haifa, one of the pioneer Jewish agricultural settlements of the first Aliyah. At Zichron Yaakov, Aaron got two more sisters, Sarah and Rivka, and a brother, Alexander. His father, Ephraim Fisher Aronson, became one of the Yishuv leading farmers. The languages Aaron spoke at home were Yiddish and Hebrew, but he also learned English, Arabic, Turkish, French, German, Romanian, and some Italian. At the age of 13, he was brought to Baron Edmund Rothschild's attention, and 4 years later, he was sent to agricultural school in France for 2 successful years before returning home to become an agronomist in Metula, a new settlement at the northernmost point of the country. Later, he left Metula to establish an organization for agricultural technology. Together with a member of the German Templar community, he launched a business for importing and selling agricultural machines such as reapers, harrows, and combine harvesters using modern marketing methods. Another company he established sold gasoline-operated pumps, a centrifuge for separating cream and making butter, and fertilizers. He also imported different varieties of seeds and wines. He started mapping Palestine botanically and in the process became a leading expert on the subject. On his 1906 field trip to Mount Hermon, while trekking around the Upper Galilee in the area of Rashaya, in what is now Lebanon, he discovered Triticum dicogoides, Waldemar, whom he considered to be the mother of wheat, a remarkable finding for agronomists and historians of human civilization. Genetics have proven that Waldemar is indeed an ancestor of most domesticated wheat strands cultivated on large scale today, with the exception of einkorn, a different ancient species which is currently just a relic crop. This discovery made Aronson world famous. He impressed many American Jews he met during his trip to United States, in particular the influential Henrietta Schultz, Jacob Schiff, and Louis Marshall. Dr. David Fairchild of the U.S. Department of Agriculture once wrote that when a short, light-complexioned Jew walked into his office, he soon discovered he was in the presence of an extraordinary man. Aronson's contacts in America enabled him to obtain funds to establish an experimental station in Palestine, which was set up in 1910 in Atlit, a few miles south of Haifa at the foot of Mount Carmel. The station, the first in the Middle East, originally employed Arab laborers, Aronson having been in favor of Jewish settlements using both Arab and Jewish labor. But this was a controversial view, and he later changed his mind and opted for complete separation between Jews and Arabs. Soon after the outbreak of the First World War, the country was menaced by a ravaging locust infestation such as has not visited Palestine for 40 years. In 1915, March through October, the locusts stripped the country of almost all vegetation. Jamal Pasha, one of the three pashas that ruled the Ottoman Empire during the World War I, drafted Aronson as the one man who might avert the threatening calamity. Aronson worked out a scientific campaign. He put together thousands of Arab soldiers to work digging trenches into which the hatching locusts were driven and destroyed. The inhabitants of the progressive Jewish villages, men, women, and children, worked until they drove from exhaustion. The fight to rout the vast army of locusts was hopeless because of lack of petroleum and galvanized iron. Yet Aronson succeeded in starving off the devouring scourge for 2 full months, providing himself a skilled organizer and exhibiting again a marked knowledge of entomological science. Aronson and the team fighting the locust invasion was given permission to move around the area known as southern Syria, including modern-day Israel, and to make detailed maps of the area they surveyed. Aronson also collected strategic information about Ottoman camps and troop deployment. In 1918, Aronson was one of the experts consulted for the purpose of demarcating the northern boundary of Palestine, focusing on the need for irrigation water. He envisioned a boundary that would assure the inclusion of the sources of the Jordan, Litani, and Yarmouk rivers. His approach became the official Zionist baseline presented to the conference peace in Paris in February 1919. The Aronsons were all bitter at the way in which the Jewish settlers were treated. Conditions in the country for Christians as well as Jews became hard after Germany started to dominate Turkey and much Jewish-owned property was seized. With the outbreak of hostilities in the region, the Aronsons saw opportunities for positive action against this Turkish rule. Joined by Avshalom Feinberg, formerly a poet in Paris and by then secretary of the Atlit station, they established an organization called the Gideonites that was committed to fight the Turks. The Gideonites decided to try to work with the British, whom they saw as pro-Zionists. They were opposed to the policies of Yishuv leaders like Ben-Gurion and Ben-Zvi, who appeared happy to be part of the Ottoman Empire. The Gideonites were convinced that an Allied victory in the war was essential if the Yishuv was to make progress, and they began to work hard to convince the Allies that they could be of special assistance in achieving an Allied victory by their ability to provide key information to the British military. The Atlit station eventually became the Gideonite center and Aaron its leader. He was called Fazoon, the spy, by settlers who disagreed with his activities, but he built up a very efficient intelligence network. Gideonites' operations eventually supplied highly detailed information to the British that helped Allenby to victory at Megiddo in September 1918, his entry into Damascus in early October, and the capture of Aleppo at the end of the month that forced Turkey to seek peace. The Aronsons, however, paid a bitter price with the tragic death of Sarah. Feinberg, who was eventually murdered by Bedouins in December 1916 while he was attempting to make contact with the British, can be credited with responsibility for the basic idea of the espionage ring. In January 1915, the Turks arrested him and accused him of having made contacts with the British Navy ship moored off Haifa Bay. He was, however, released for lack of evidence. He then presented Aaron with a plan for providing the British with anti-Turkish intelligence. As a result, Alexander Aronson was sent to try to make contact with the British in Egypt. In disguise and using a false Spanish passport, he managed to board the American cruiser Des Moines and reach Egypt late 1915, but the British were not interested in his proposals for local Palestinian help and were suspicious that he might be an enemy agent. Feinberg was then dispatched to Cairo to join Alexander. He impressed the officer in charge of intelligence at Port Said, Lieutenant Leonard Willey, later the eminent archaeologist, and managed to convince the British that an efficient system for passing critical intelligence to them could be established. At the same time, the British government had begun to be concerned about the situation in the Middle East, and as a result, they accepted the Aronsons as suitable and reliable agents for British intelligence. The proposed organization was called NILI, an acronym of words from Samuel 15:29, Netzra Israel lo yeshiker, the strength of Israel will not lie, chosen when the British officer with whom contact was established asked for a password. A Bible was opened at the page containing this verse. On November 1915, the British agreed on an espionage operation centered on Atlit. Feinberg returned to Palestine to help initiate the operation, but despite their acceptance of the plan, it received little attention and support from the British. Alexander Aronson then went to the United States, where he became an active lecturer and propagandist. Rivka joined her brother in the U.S. to appeal for funds, and Alexander eventually returned to Cairo in October 1917, became a captain of intelligence, and was awarded a DSO. In the Second World War, he served in the British Intelligence Service. NILI regularly gave information to British intelligence via a network extending from Beersheba to Damascus. Once a month, when there was no moon, a naval sloop from Port Said would land near Atlit, and Sarah Aronson would pass over intelligence reports. Carrier pigeons were occasionally used. 23 active NILI members collected and transmitted intelligence data to the British, besides some 12 passive ones. In all, more than 100 people work on NILI's behalf, some serving in the Turkish army, some engaged on roads construction and on water supplies. The NILI network handed over to Allenby's headquarters data that included topographic and visual intelligence about ground and aerial activity, as well as information on the deployment and the battle orders of enemy forces. Of even greater value were reports on joint Turkish and German intentions, their expected reserves, and their strengths. Even ciphers related to links between Damascus, Turkey, and Germany were obtained. Some information was extracted for German pilots who were treated medically by a physician who was a Nili spy. Narman Belkind, a member of Nili, was captured and provided the Turks with information that led to the settlement of Zikronyako being surrounded in October 1917. Many Nili members, including Sarah, were arrested. The Turks tried to get Sarah to disclose the names of her associates. Her father was beaten unconscious, and she herself was tortured for 4 days before she took her own life by shooting herself in the mouth with a pistol she had previously hidden. Naaman Belkin and Joseph Lyshensky were hung in Damascus by the Ottomans. Nili was the most famous spy network operating in the Middle East during the First World War. Let's look now at two figures who were pivotal against the Turks in the Great War, one famous and one generally unknown today. While very different individuals with very different goals, Thomas Edward Lawrence, Lawrence of Arabia, the Oxford-trained Arabic-speaking archaeologist who became a self-taught guerrilla warfare innovator, and Aaron Aronson, who emigrated to Palestine at age 6, a self-educated agronomist and geologist who developed and financed an espionage network, shared a common strong desire of ending the Ottoman dominance of the Palestine and Arabia. While the activities of Lawrence are well documented, those of Aaron Aronson are virtually unknown outside of Israel. As I said, Aaron came to the conclusion that the only hope for the Jews was a British victory. In October 1916, Aaron, in cooperation with MI5, arranged to be secretly transported to London, where he convinced the British of his knowledge of the local terrain and the logistics of the Turkish forces. He wanted to cooperate with them in the gathering of intelligence. A few months later, at the Savoy Hotel in Cairo, Aronson met Lawrence. Aaron, with an ego certainly equal to Lawrence's, noted in his diary his impression that the young lieutenant was very well informed on the Palestinian question, but rather conceited. For the next 3 years, Lawrence and Aronson were to cooperate and conflict with each other, one to advocate and lead the future of the Arabs, the other to lay the foundations for the Jewish state. Of course, both of them were in conflict with the plans of the great powers, which they supposedly served. Each of these strong-willed men had different views as to the future of Palestine. Even though he acknowledged the positive aspects of Jewish settlement in the area, Lawrence seemed to echo the general antisemitism of the British officer corps, warning against the extent of the Zionist goals advocated by Aronson. Aronson thought that Lawrence had experienced too much success at an early age and that he was infatuated with himself. The conflict between Lawrence and Aronson continued at the Paris Peace Conference. The sophisticated and charming Lawrence was impressive in presenting the needs for the Arabs to control the region, while Aronson, with his powerful American friends such as Felix Frankfurter, Harry Morgenthau, and Justice Louis Brandeis, vainly struggled to define and organize the Zionist position. Paradoxically, there was a moment in which Faisal, with Lawrence's assistance, agreed that the Arab and Zionist movements complete one another. How different history could have been had that understanding been made into a reality. In 1917, Chaim Weizmann sent Aronson on a political campaign to the USA. While there, Aronson learned that the Ottoman authorities had intercepted a Nili carrier pigeon, which led to the arrest and torture of his sister Sarah and the other members of the underground. After the war, Weizmann called on Aronson to work on the Versailles Peace Conference. On May 15, 1919, under unclear circumstances, Aronson was killed in an airplane crash over the English Channel while on his way to France. Aronson died a bachelor and had no children. His research on Palestine and Transjordanian flora, as well as part of his exploration diaries, were published posthumously. After Aronson's death, the director of British military intelligence confirmed that Allenby's victory would not have been possible without the information supplied by the Aronson group. After his death, Allenby paid tribute to him. "The death of Aaron Aronson," he wrote, "deprived me of a valued friend and of a staff officer impossible to replace. He was mainly responsible for the formation of my field intelligence organization behind Turkish lines. His death is a loss to the British Empire and to Zionism, but the work he has done can never die." Another British officer, Brigadier Walter Gribben, who worked closely with Aaron, said that Aaron was responsible for saving 30,000 British lives. "The Jews must remember that no man has done more than Aaron to make the conquest of Palestine by the British possible." To Ormi Gore, the Aronsons were the most valuable nucleus of our intelligence services in Palestine during the war. "Nothing we can do for them will ever repay the work they have done and what they have suffered for us." Aaron Aronson was clearly a man of unusual qualities, described on his death as a very practical dreamer of dreams and one who had been a very pillar of support for the Jewish cause. To Jewish Brandeis, he was one of the most interesting, brilliant, and remarkable men he had ever met. He was said to be a picturesque figure and was clearly a man with charisma, highly respected by the Cree British government figures. He was also a difficult man, which led him to make enemies even in the Zionist circles. His premature death at the age of 43 partly explained the lack of recognition and begs the question of what influence he would have had on the subsequent Jewish and Zionist history had he had not perished so young. Anecdotally, it may be worth mentioning that Aaron Aronson was the first car owner in Palestine and one of the first to own a bicycle, which he bought back from France. This concludes our episode on Aaron Aronson. Until next podcast, be well.